This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Independence Day from the entire WMMB family. This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke, and I am Jim Behnke. And welcome to the program where we'll discuss anything and everything having to do with the space program. Top of the list, of course, is what's going on with NASA, our federal public space agency and vital contributor not only to the local economy here on Florida's Space Coast, but an agency that I believe, anyway, is absolutely critical to the well-being and even security of our nation. On this program, we'll also talk about military space operations, developments in the world of commercial space, whether that means the traditional aerospace contractor community, the big rockets, Atlas and Delta, the commercial satellites they launch, or even the new breed of space entrepreneurs who want to carry, or hope to carry one day anyway, cargo people to the International Space Station and beyond, or perhaps even a cabin full of paying space tourists. It's right around the corner, and it can happen here if we do the right thing. Other topics fair game on this program, space policy, space science, space education, space-related entertainment, and even space-related politics, which happens to be a perfect and maybe ideal topic for today, for this national holiday celebrating our country's birthday. And so we will talk about space politics as the program unfolds. But in this first segment, before we get into what's going on in Washington, let's talk a little bit about what's been going on around the Cape and around the world for the past week here. Some news that maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't heard. First of all, we talked last week about this knob, this light fixture knob that had got stuck inside Atlantis's cockpit during the Hubble Space Telescope mission in May. And it was jammed in there between the instrument panel and the inner pressure pane of one of the cockpit windows. And during this week, KSC Director Bob Cabana told us last week, they went ahead and pressurized Atlantis's crew cabin so that it was actually greater than the pressure down here at sea level, greater than the 14.7 pounds per square inch. And by kind of ballooning the crew cabin, kind of opening up the volume in there, indeed, that knob did pop free. The technicians were able to get it out. The big question now is whether or not there was enough damage to that inner window pane, that pressure pane that holds the pressure inside the crew cabin in orbit. There were a few nicks on that window, and if engineers decide that that's too risky, why then they are going to have to go and do something about it. And depending on what they do, could mean a delay in Atlantis's next mission. But for now, anyway, it looks like Atlantis, anyway, can get off the ground November 12th. And in fact, when that mission flies, it'll be Atlantis's second to its last mission. So Atlantis only has two more flights. Meanwhile, Endeavour at the Kennedy Space Center was tested this week, and it appears as though things went well with that test. We'll wait and see exactly what NASA says about it and whether they can get off the ground again here on July 11th. Of course, when they fuel up the tank for that July 11th launch attempt, will be the proof in the pudding, won't it, for getting Endeavour off the ground and off to the International Space Station. Also this week, out in deep space is the Ulysses space probe. Now, this probe was launched in October of 1990 and on a huge looping mission out to Jupiter and then swung out of the plane of the ecliptic. That's the plane that all of these planets orbit around the sun, and went and shot out over the south and north pole of the sun to study the sun's poles, something that the astronomers and scientists have wanted to do for a long time. And that mission, again, launched in October of 1990. They have now officially said goodbye to Ulysses. It is running out of power and running out of maneuvering fuel. If it hasn't run out of fuel already, there's some debate about that. But in any case, its power is going, and it's not sending science data back, and at least not enough to make it worthwhile for them to continue talking about it. So one of the big planetary exploration probes launched by the space shuttle back in those days after return to flight in Challenger, now officially turned off. And I'll never forget that launch because that was the first shuttle launch after a long summer of hydrogen leaks out at the pad. And now we're saying goodbye to that probe. So Ulysses did well, learned a lot about the sun and how it affects our planet. And we'll see what we can do about additional studies of the sun in the years to come. There was a launch this week at the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, a Russian launch, a Russian Proton commercial, Russian Proton launch, sent up a Sirius XM satellite. So if you're one of those many listeners that do use satellite radio and have that in your car or at home or whatever, first of all, shame on you that you're not listening to WMMB all of the time. But secondly, there is a brand new satellite in orbit now that will offer additional programming for you in the near future. And it'll actually replace one of the satellites that went up, the very first one that went up, as that one has aged and done its job. Also this week, NASA selected 9 new astronauts for the space program. And the astronaut class of 2009 selected and announced. A handful of different kind of personalities, a mix of military and civilian people, included a technical intelligence officer with the CIA, a couple of NASA flight surgeons that have had plenty of experience in Houston, a flight controller, a molecular biologist, a couple of Navy pilots, an Air Force pilot, and the special assistant to the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff got the nod and will start training. The interesting thing about these astronauts is that they will absolutely never fly on the space shuttle. So as we talk about what will eventually replace the shuttle, whether that is the Constellation hardware or maybe something else, whatever it is that will go up to replace the shuttle, these are the astronauts that will have a shot at getting up there first. So it's definitely the beginning of a new era in space in terms of our astronauts. There is quite a few of the astronauts have retired over the last few years. This is the first crew that they've selected, I think, in about a couple of years. And the plan here is to start replenishing the astronauts as they need to again, prepare for this future flight, this future program, whether, again, it is Constellation or something else. The Augustine panel that is meeting to determine that right now, to determine what is the best route for NASA to take, is continuing their deliberations. They heard some interesting comments from NASA engineers about some alternatives to the Ares 1 and Ares 5 rockets that have been the plan since the beginning of this whole venture to go back to the moon and onto Mars. Something that resembles what used to be called the Shuttle C program was certainly a big topic of discussion this past week, as they looked at maybe a cargo-carrying device of some kind being strapped to the side of an external tank instead of the space shuttle orbiter, the winged vehicle that you see on the side of the tank. It would just basically be a tube, a big cargo holder. It could carry the Orion capsule on the top of it as well, and we'll just have to see whether or not that was impressed the Augustine panel or not, and how that affects the budget and kind of what this all happens. I mean, we'll talk in a moment here about the future of the space program and whether there's enough money for it or not for the various schemes. So as we do continue our program on this patriotic holiday, we will be joined, in fact, momentarily by our very own congressman, U.S. Representative Bill Posey, and we'll have some questions for him. Don't forget, by the way, that if you step away from your radio, you can follow us as we stream the program at WMMBAM.com. And while you're there, check out the podcasts of our previous broadcasts and lots more to do at WMMBAM.com. In the meantime, this is Space Talk with Jim Banky on WMMB. Stay tuned. Space Talk continues here on WMMB. I'm Jim Banky, and thanks for tuning in. Let me send out another time for a big happy birthday to the United States of America on this July 4th, the greatest country on this planet or any other planet known to the galaxy, known to humankind. And just a little word here, as everyone who works out at the Cape Kennedy Space Center here on Florida's Space Coast knows, when it comes to launching, safety is the first rule in launch operations. So as the rest of you who maybe don't work out at the Cape await the sun to set tonight here and you can start shooting off your fireworks, please be careful and considerate to your neighbors who might not appreciate your orbital debris falling on their lawn. It happens to me every year. It drives me absolutely crazy. But be careful, be safe. And on this national holiday, I think it's very fitting, very appropriate to have as our guest today, my representative in Washington, I hope yours, and my friend, the Honorable Bill Posey of Florida's 15th Congressional District. The congressman was elected last fall, serving his first term in Washington, and today he joins us by phone. And let's welcome to Space Talk Congressman Bill Posey. Congressman, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jim. How you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we've got a lot to talk about. Let's get right to it. First of all, big picture. You've been in Washington for a couple of months now, a few months. You've been working some pretty serious space issues and other national issues, of course, which we won't get into. Let's keep it to space. But tell me kind of, now that you've been up there, what are your impressions about Congress, about the space program? Is this truly a bipartisan issue? What do people say about space up there?
Space is a bipartisan issue. Surprisingly, it's one of the few issues that are bipartisan. That doesn't mean all the people from either side like it, but I'm glad to work with members of the other party across the aisle on space, and they're glad to work with me on it, and we work well on it.
We know about Congresswoman Cosmos certainly representing the north side of the Space Center, where you've got the south side. It's neat to have two of you working. How are the rest of the Florida delegation coming along in terms of their very public support for space?
Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat from Broward County, is very, very, probably the most proactive of anyone outside of the Space Coast. She is a strong proponent of space, co-sponsored the bill I filed to extend shuttle schedule till we have another man-rated program in operation. She was a prime co-sponsor of that the day I filed it. She was on it with me.
Let's talk about that for a minute then. Now, we had Bob Cabana on, the Kennedy Space Center director, last week on Space Talk, and he mentioned to us that schedule is important, but safety obviously more important. And so that if these eight remaining space shuttles should happen to launching them happens to fall out into the fiscal year 2011, past next September 30th, that he should feel comfortable in allowing that to happen. But the problem being that there's no money yet to pay for those missions should they go into 2011. How are you guys up in Washington approaching that? Do you think there'll be some money there to support that?
Well, we have asked for that. It's been a moving target, Jim. You may recall that when this great stimulus bill was passed, there was $600,000 in there for NASA to study the environment. And I'm sorry, $600,000 or $600 million.
Yeah.
And there was $400 million in there for manned spaceflight. And everybody goes, woohoo, you know, they're coming around. We got an extra $400 million.
Right.
And I said then publicly, and I told people, I said, listen, it's not over yet. You know, what they can give you in this bill, they can take us away in the next bill, which is what they did.
Yeah.
And so when the funding bill came through a week ago, it was minus, I think, $566 million, a net loss, about $166 million for manned spaceflight. Now, the environmental funding was not Florida-specific. It certainly wasn't Cape-specific. It was very nebulously written, so who knows where that $600 million can go. But the $400 million, although it wasn't Florida or Cape-specific, it did say for manned spaceflight, so we felt, you know, a little bit good about that. But then when they came in with a cut at $566 million, you know, everybody that supports space was pretty much alarmed.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I've never understood as an advocate of space and working with folks like the Coalition for Space Exploration is this is such nickel and dime stuff when you consider the entire federal budget. I mean, we're fond of saying that NASA's budget anyway is half a penny per federal dollar. That's nothing. I mean, you can double that and add 30 and still be a drop in the bucket to the federal budget. Why is it so hard to find, when we're throwing around, as you say, in the stimulus package, billions of dollars, to find another $500 million, $600 million to take care of this problem?
Well, it's one of the dysfunctional things about Washington. Now, you can't say, you know, $1 billion is a gnat on the windshield of a moving car. Otherwise, you'd have to fund every billion-dollar project that everybody had.
Right.
You know, from studying the six habits of flies to who knows what, because they'd say, well, it's only this much money. And that's often heard up there. You know, people say, well, this is only, you know, $500 million. Well, if it's only $500 million, why don't you write a doggone check for it?
Yeah.
If it's only $500 million, that's still a tremendous amount of money and could be used to make a tremendous impact on many, many different programs. That's why it's so important that government prioritize its spending as to what is most important and what yields the greatest public good. And if, in fact, it's a project that the federal government should even be funding in the first place. That's one of the areas in which Congress is very dysfunctional.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the situation in my home where I want to buy the new widescreen television for the house. And certainly I have authorized that payment. But my wife, who controls the purse, has not appropriated the funds. And I say, you know, it's only, you know, what, $1,500? And she says, well, it's only $1,500, but you've got a bill to pay for the kids' college tuition, and you've got the mortgage to deal with, and I want a new this or that, and you got the last thing. And so, you know, it works in the household, too, so I guess I understand that. But
yeah, balance of power. There you go.
It's balance of power, but it is frustrating.
I have the same thing at my house. Get over it, learn to live with it.
And when you add six or seven zeros to the number, it must be an incredible thing to deal with. It must be really tough.
Well, you know, when we talk objectively about the use of money, NASA should hold its own. There's a whole lot of reasons why it's important, not only for our local economy. That's not a good reason to fund anything in Washington. It's a good reason for local people to pursue that, of course.
Sure.
But just that it's going to provide jobs in Brevard County is not a good reason to request funding on a project in Washington, D.C. What it does do is it retains the national treasure we have out there called the launch crew,
mm-hmm.
Number one, the best in the world, which will probably never reassemble once they disperse to the far end of the earth,
right,
when they're out of work for 2 or 3 years, just like the big layoffs in 69 and 70, as you will recall.
Sure.
You know, engineers, as Thad Altman's fond of saying, pump gas until our homes are repossessed, and then they went back to wherever they came from, never to return to the Space Coast again and get involved in a job where it's relying on reappropriation of Congress every single year.
And isn't that your case, too, Bill? I mean, as I recall, you worked Apollo, and then when after the program ended, you were let go, of course, and went on to do other things.
Yeah, it was pretty painful. I was so blessed by the experience. Of course, we know adversity makes you stronger.
Sure.
You know, we were lucky, our little house that we lived in, that we had all our money tied up in. We got $300 and somebody to take over payments. And Katie and I considered ourselves lucky because, you know, most of the houses on the block are repossessed before the layoffs were all over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had to leave the area for work for a couple of years, which made me appreciate this area even more, and which is why I came back to it. I went into real estate so I would never get laid off again.
Right, right.
And you know, I think adversity is a good thing, but I think if they had continued that program, and by the way, you know, we knew at the time these were not forever jobs.
Right.
You know, they paid more than the guy at the post office paid for doing the same work out there. They paid more than the guy at the local electronics store made for doing basically, you know, across the board, the jobs paid more money because they were time-sensitive jobs. It was a 10-year goal that the president had to put a man on the moon and return him safe to the earth. And we find out now when they uncovered the previously classified presidential papers, I always you know, applauded Kennedy for his vision in space, and it comes out now that he said, well, I really didn't care anything about space. I just want to beat the Russians and show that capitalism will beat socialism in anything, and it sure as heck did, as we well know. But beyond the economic impact, beyond the national treasure we have of the launch team here, beyond the fact that space is absolutely, without a doubt, the only thing that the United States of America is undeniably and undisputedly respected for around this globe, despite all those things, it's important to our national security. Space is the military high ground. You know, I tell the story about the evolution of military high ground from being the biggest man back in Cro-Magnon days, you were the ruler, to when there was a development of weapons, whoever had the most sophisticated weapons, i.e. straight spears and strong shields, to whoever had the best navy in the world back in the days in Sweden and Spain were the most powerful nations in the world because they controlled the seas, to World War I when it boiled down to who could get their tanks, the most tanks on the ground, and mechanize an army, to World War II when whoever controlled the skies ultimately controlled the destiny of this world and certainly the outcome of World War II, and that was us.
Congressman, we need to interrupt you for the moment. We're going to take a pause for a quick moment and get caught up on news and weather and whatnot, and we'll continue talking with you, Congressman Bill Posey, our guest. This is Space Talk. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
Space Talk on WMMB.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. This is Space Talk on WMMB. I'm your host, Jim Banky. And with me on this July 4th, Independence Day, how appropriate to have our local representative for most of Brevard County anyway, calling us in from out and about. He is in the district to celebrate the holiday, our own Congressman Bill Posey. Congressman, we were talking about a lot of different things. We were talking about the high ground. We were talking about how important it is for our space program to be healthy. And you know, since you specifically represent Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, where you're kind of where the border is drawn there with Congresswoman Cosmos and the Kennedy Space Center, I imagine that you become but certainly you're taking a look at the military side, support for the 45th Space Wing, our range operations, certainly commercial space activities going on out the Cape. Not many people know that the military space program actually has more money going to it each year than NASA. What's going on there? Are you watching out for that? And I mean, what's the challenges for you on that side of the house?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was with General Bolton. What day is today? Wednesday. I guess it was Monday or Tuesday. Within the last 2 days, I you know, we're booked from 7 to get home about 11 every day on this so-called holiday period.
Right. Yeah.
But I had a meeting with General Bolton over at Cape Kennedy, and we were going through the needs there. You know, that infrastructure has been outdated for years. I mean, we still have 1960 technology tracking some of our rockets out there, and that's not healthy.
Yeah.
There's a time when that just won't work anymore. You look at the maze of the old wiring harnesses and the way these things are wadded up. And while they're making some conversions to modern day high technology, to a large extent, we still rely a great deal on 60s, 70s, and 80s technology, which is outdated. The maintenance is high. I mean, there's times they got to buy parts off of eBay because they're no longer manufactured. They have to refurbish or manufacture their own. Let me add, you know, we're so lucky to have General Bolton to be our commander and watch over that. That guy really gets it. He knows the space program. He knows the importance about jobs and his proactive performance beyond the Cape itself benefits this community so greatly. It's just a real blessing that we have General Bolton.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of good things about him. We've talked to his folks, and we'll have him on as our guest very soon. You know, getting back to shuttle talk here a little bit, and it relates to the workforce issue. There is the gap that we talk about, and the gap, for those of you who are not into the big inside baseball space lingo, we're not talking about a fashionable clothes store in the mall, but we're talking about that period of time from when the space shuttle ends its missions, it makes its last flight, and the time when our astronauts can be launched again on a new vehicle. We call it a replacement for the shuttle. It won't quite have the same job as the shuttle, but in terms of getting people up and back, the Orion spacecraft will have that job. The gap is that period of time between those two events, and that gap seems to fluctuate depending on who you talk to and how budgets are forecast and the technical challenges. 4, 5, 6 years, we certainly lived through a gap after Apollo, after the last Apollo Soyuz mission in 1975, we had a 6-year gap until the first shuttle flew in 1981. And those of you who were there then, and Congressman Posey certainly lived through that time, knows how hard that was. Obviously, our economy in Brevard County is a little more diverse then, but now than it was then. But nevertheless, the gap exists. And in terms of that workforce, again, Congressman, what can we do to keep those folks here? What are you doing? What is Washington doing? How can you work with the folks in Florida, Space Florida, and other organizations to keep that workforce present in one form or another?
Well, there's a number of things, Jim, that have been going on and that are going on. I served on the Space Florida Board for 14 years when it was formerly the Spaceport Authority and then the Space Authority, and now it's Space Florida. It's headed up by Frank DeBillo, who's doing an excellent job out there being proactive, trying to facilitate more commercial launches and diversify the base that we have. As you know, the United States of America previously dominated at one point all satellites being launched into space. We were clearly the number one commercial place for space in the world, and we have parlayed that due to a lot of overregulation, unnecessary red tape, which was add-on expense, into probably about 5% of the commercial launch market. Mr. DeBillo and the folks at Space Florida are trying to recapture some of our lost ground there. You know, at one time, just a few countries had space programs. Now there's untold. It's hard to find a country on a map that does not have a space program of some kind, because they want to have the same kind of telecommunications that we have. They want to have GPS. They want to have many of the valuable benefits that we enjoy from space. And so they're, you know, up and running. And instead of going to us, they go to a clone of our former Thor or our Delta rocket, called the Ariane or others, that other governments subsidize launches of rather than overregulate and add cost to.
Well, that's right. We talked at the top of our hour here about the Russian Proton launch of the Sirius XM satellite, radio satellite. I mean, that's a U.S. mission on a Russian rocket launched not on an Atlas or Delta, which don't have enough to do as it is now. The commercial market's just not there for them. The government market is there, but they both programs will tell you that they could launch a lot more if they had the customers. You know, how do we get that back without blatantly subsidizing these flights?
Well, you do it by eliminating red tape, and that's where General Bolton is so effective. He gets it. He really gets it. He gets supply and demand. He gets things that hinder our efforts to recapture the lost ground that we have in space, and we're trying to get the President and Congress to understand that, too. We had, as you well know, a vacancy in the seat of the NASA administrator for budget negotiations for months, and we have been begging the President, please, you know, put somebody at that table, put somebody in that seat. When you're discussing the budget and you have the heads of every agency there jockeying for position and justifying their funding, but the NASA seat's empty, that's not a good sign. We have now he has put together the Augustine Commission, whose mission is to study where we are and where we're going. And that adds another big question mark there. What are they going to say? Right. Certainly, what they recommend will in all probability be the direction that the president will take. We don't have a unified force here on where the commission should go. There's people who are what we call shuttle huggers and people who want to get rid of the shuttle. And there's people that would prefer we try and do our space station transportation back and forth with lower lift capacity rockets, that we increase them. There's people that want to use the Falcon. There's people that want to use the Delta IV. There's people that want to use the rockets in the Jupiter group.
Yeah.
There's the Atlas that may be capable, and there's the NASA heavy launch vehicle. All those are alternative uses to going with the Ares rocket that would be modified and upgraded to go beyond the space station, to go back to the moon, and go to Mars eventually. Those were Michael Griffin's visions when he was a NASA administrator. So now we don't have one vision. We have many different visions. And my hope and prayer is that when the Augustine Commission issues its report, that it will be positive for space, number one, positive for Florida and our launch facilities, number two. And it will be positive enough that we can all unify and support that so we don't end up with everybody losing by making the gap longer, even, just like we had with the tanker, you know, the confusion between the two tanker bidders. You know, I'm not taking sides with either one of them, but when you make a decision, you move forward. You can reconsider the decision 50 times. And what is lost in the interim is the productivity that you would have had from that. And it's going to be so easy to go from what they first said was a 3-year gap to a 4-year gap to a 5-year gap, and eventually say, what the heck do we really need this for anyway? Nobody's life is depending upon it. Little do they know the national security implications of holding the military high ground that we talked about before the break, the implications of losing a satellite that communicates money transfers to our banking institutions that the average American would be just about disabled without a cell phone or his laptop. When you think about the loss of productivity that would result, you realize how much it would impact the global economic war that we're in right now. You know, all wars aren't fought with bullets and bombs anymore. There's economic wars, and that's what most wars are about, is economics anyway.
That's right.
And we could quickly be on the losing end of the economic war if we abandon our ability to put people and products into space and to maintain them.
Now, Congressman, we need to wrap up here with you, sir. And one last quick question with a quick answer. Have you become the space cadet in Congress now? Are you the space guy from Florida?
Well, I try not to do that because I probably am, really, but you try just not to be known as the space guy, because then anytime you say something about space, they think it's parochial.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
It's the deal where you don't worry about who's going to get the credit for getting this stuff done, just that you get it done.
That's right. Well, thank you, Congressman. Pleasure to talk to you. Keep up the good work. And we're going to be right back with some more news and updates from you with Space Talk with Jim Banky. For now, this is WMMB. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Jim.
This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
Welcome back to Space Talk with Jim Banky. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB. I invite you to check out WMMBAM.com for all your local news and information, streaming audio of our program and archived podcasts of past editions of Space Talk and of other programs here on WMMB, including your weekday morning host, the Uncommon Bill Mick. Lots of his shows are up there online, too. We invite you to pay attention to all that stuff on WMMBAM.com. Last week, we were asked about space station sightings and where to go to find that information. We're perilously close to having a new space section up on the website, which will be the new home for a Space Talk on WMMB. But I do want to call your attention to the fact that there are some tremendous citing opportunities for the space station during the coming week. And I there's actually a handful of them. I don't want to take the time to read them all and give you all the numbers, but let's just say that if you're going to want to see a good view of the space station and you want to do it at night when you're still kind of wide awake and wrapping up for the day, this Tuesday, July 7th, go outside at 9:30 p.m., look basically to the west, and you're going to see this star appear in the sky, and it's going to fly almost more than halfway up the sky from the horizon, moving west to east. 9:30 p.m. Tuesday, 5-minute pass. For 5 minutes, you'll be able to see the space station fly overhead. And if you are an early bird riser, then you can get up that very next morning on Wednesday, July 8th, and at 5:33 in the morning, watch the space station fly over from basically from the north to the south. So Tuesday night, 9:30 p.m. for 5 minutes. It's the only big, giant, moving star in the sky that you're going to see. If it has a red blinking light on it or a green light or it's not incredibly bright, it's not the space station. It's something else. So it's very obvious when you see it. If you get a pair of binoculars out, you might even be able to see some of the structure of the space station. It moves a little bit too fast to track with a telescope, although some people have done that and have gotten some pretty remarkable pictures of the space station taken from the ground looking up. But again, Tuesday night at 9:30 for about 5 minutes, and Wednesday morning at 5:30 in the morning for about 5 minutes or so. So hope that you get a chance to get out there and take a look. And it is a truly spectacular sight. And to know that six people are inside that tiny little star moving at 5 miles a second, it's just almost too hard to believe. We want to take a quick moment and look ahead to some upcoming launches. I kind of want to make this a regular feature on Space Talk, where we talk about some things that maybe you ought to know about and keep an eye on. For example, on July 11th, of course, we're hoping to get Endeavour off the ground on its mission to the space station. A few days after that, on July 13th, from the Kwajalein Atoll in the Pacific Ocean, in the Marshall Islands, is the launch of a Falcon 1. Now, Falcon 1 is an important launch for us here at the Cape because Elon Musk and the folks at SpaceX are trying to get ready to launch the Falcon 9 from the Cape. And the Falcon 9 is basically a bunch of Falcon 1s put together. So if this Falcon 1 launches and is completely successful, then that bodes very well for that entire team and that company to continue preparing for their first launch of a Falcon 9 from the Cape here in the next the next few months, we hope, perhaps, maybe early next year. July 24th, the next Progress launch to the space station. That's a Soyuz launch from Kazakhstan. That's where they bring up the cargo to the space station, the 34th mission to do so. So that launches July 24th. Those missions are always important because they do deliver the supplies that we need, that the astronauts need to get to the space station. The next Atlas launch from the Cape is now targeted for August 12th. And the next Delta II launch from the Cape planned for August 17th, another one of the GPS launches. So we've got quite a few flights coming up here, Shuttle July 11th, Atlas August 12th, Delta August 17th. So it'll continue to be a busy summer here, and we will do our best to bring all of those missions to you live here on WMMB. Well, just to kind of wrap up some talk here about Independence Day today and July 4th, I wanted to bring this attention to you. It's kind of neat. John Adams wrote a letter to his wife, Abigail, the day before the Declaration of Independence was presented to the colonies and marking the birth of our nation. And Adams wrote this to his wife. He said, quote, that this event, quote, will be the most memorable epic in the history of America. I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated on this day or as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward, forevermore, unquote. Now, I cannot think of you know, every time we see a launch from the Space Coast, from our own backyard, you know, that as we're celebrating, you know, the greatness that our nation is capable of. Every time a rocket goes off, we think how cool it is that we can do this. As free men and women, you know, we have achieved so much in space. We have so much left to do. And we just hope that God will continue to bless all of our efforts in our great nation as we celebrate it's the 233rd birthday of America. Well, speaking of greatness, the 40th anniversary of Apollo 11, the first lunar landing mission, is just a week or so away. July 16th will mark the 40th anniversary of the launch, and July 20th will be the anniversary of the actual moon landing. They splashed down on July 24th back home here on Earth. And during the next two editions of Space Talk, on July 11th and July 18th, we are going to spend time talking about the Apollo program. We'll have some special guests. There are several ceremonies going on around Brevard County to commemorate the Apollo 11 anniversary, and we'll preview some of those for you, give you some words and information about how you can participate in those ceremonies. I want to call attention to an incredibly well-done package of stories and memorabilia that's on the Florida Today website. Your local newspaper, floridatoday.com, has got an incredible Apollo 11 memorial up for everyone to look at and to contribute to. And I think you'll find it very, very interesting. There's a number of sites that are going to be up and about reliving the Apollo 11 anniversary. And again, beginning next week, we will start detailing those for you. And by then, of course, we'll have our web presence online and have a lot of links for you to check out to just absolutely revel and relive all of this activity that that's been going on or that went on 40 years ago this next couple of weeks. So Apollo 11 will be on tap for the next couple of weeks. And then after that, a lot of other things planned. Space Talk going very well, we hope. We hope you enjoy listening to the program. We remind you that you can download the podcast of this program anytime you'd like at WMMBAM.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Space Talking. And you can even send us email at spacetalking@AOL.com. And again, following all of this on WMMBAM.com. So thank you for listening today. No matter where you are, enjoy the fireworks. Please stay safe. Once again, happy Independence Day from all of your friends at WMMB. And for now, this is Space Talk with Jim Banky. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Have a great night.